It's episode 127 of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast, and what are we going to do today? We're going to squeeze a little juice. Don't know what I mean? Let's get into it right now.
Welcome to the Divorce Resource Guy podcast with Jason Lavoy, a.k.a. the Divorce Resource Guy, a former divorce attorney turned divorce coach, talking about all things divorce, including the good, bad, and the ugly from an attorney's point of view. Remember, you're not alone. And now, your host, Jason Lavoy.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast. I am your host, Jason Lavoy, a.k.a. the Divorce Resource Guy. And today, in episode 127, you heard me right in the intro, we're going to squeeze a little juice. Not sure what I mean? Well, you're in the right place because I promise you it'll be worth your while. Squeeze the Juice is the name of a book. It's called Squeeze the Juice, Live with Purpose, Then Leave a Legacy. My guest and author of that book, Jennifer Lee. Jennifer is the founder of Modern Wealth, a Sarasota-based financial firm with a focus on helping individuals experiencing transition. Now, she has over 27 years of experience and expertise in the financial services industry, all the way to Florida. Jennifer has found that a relationship with a financial advisor is most critical at the intersections of life, where both emotions collide with financial events. She enjoys facilitating her clients through challenges as they experience life's upsets, such as divorce, a huge one, right? The loss of a spouse and other things. And whether you are experiencing divorce, a business client expanding or selling your operation, or a couple just wanting to make sure that they have provided for their family in the best and most efficient way possible, Jennifer provides a fresh perspective to the financial planning process. So with all that being said, let's talk about Jennifer and what she means by squeeze the juice. Jennifer, welcome to the show. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
So we're going to talk about obviously what you do. You have a book out. It's great. I'm going to get to it in a minute. I'll just tell everybody the title because I love the title. It kind of rolls off the tongue. Squeeze the Juice. And we were just talking off the air and I was like, oh yeah, that just makes me thirsty. But give everybody who doesn't know who you are or isn't familiar with you yet, just an idea of your history and the path that you took to get to where you are today.
Sure, excellent question. So my background is finance. It's accounting, numbers. I love money. I love math. So really playing around in that arena. I was in the accounting world for quite a bit. And then about 4 years into that career, I was offered an opportunity to join my father's practice as a financial advisor. And I jumped on that and really haven't looked back. Started my own practice and relocated to Florida, going on 13 years now. The practice in Florida, the relocation in Florida. Let me restart that. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
Been in practice for myself for over 27 years. Relocated to Florida about 12 years ago. So I work primarily with women in financial transition. I like to say I don't discriminate. I have male clients. I have happily married couples. But my sweet spot, my real niche where I think I can add the most value happens to be women who are going through big, big changes. Divorce, widowed, relocation, job sale, job change, those type of things.
Yeah, no, of course. I kind of fall into that same boat as a divorce coach myself. It just so happens I don't discriminate. But the majority of my clients also are just women. And it's just the way the chips fall. So as a man, I kind of appreciate that, you know, women want to work with me and so that's a good thing. But you mentioned your dad, and I know at the beginning of your book, you kind of talk about your father and what happened. Was his passing a catalyst for you writing this book, or did you have this in the works already?
You know, I'm sure that it had some impact, but really the catalyst for writing the book was trying to reach the right audience. You know, I've been doing this for quite a long time and I'm happy. I can be in a room full of people and I know I can help everybody in the room, but maybe they're not the right client for me or I'm not the right advisor for them. So writing the book, I think, was just a way to create what I call as a risk-free interview, right? You read the book, you get a sense of who I am, what my values are, what my approach is. And it, hey, if you want to work with me, fantastic. Then we can go down that path and see what that looks like. You know, there's a lot of fun stories about my father with regard to the book includes writing your family love letter. And I have a funny story about that if you want to talk about that a little later.
Oh, well, you just brought it up. Let's do it right now before we forget.
Okay. So a number of years ago, I do these talks called Writing Your Family Love Letter. And basically, it's writing to the people who are most important in your life, right? So whether that be your spouse, whether that be your kid, whether that be your niece and nephew, your best friend, whatever it is, think of those people who count on you, who you nurture their relationship. And think if this was the last time you had an opportunity to talk with them. If this is the last phone call, the last Zoom, that last in-person meeting, what do they need to know, right? What do they need to know about what they mean to you? What do they need to know about what has been important in your life? What do they need to know about their role in your life? And if it's your spouse, you know, or your children, what about assets? What about work ethic? What about marriage? All these things. So writing your family love letter is basically having all those important conversations, you know, put down on paper with those people who count on you and who you love. And I had done this talk and had happened to be a group of women in a networking group, and they were crying. They were saying, "I'm an ostrich. You know, I love this. I felt like you were talking just to me." So I was sharing this story with my mom and dad, and my mom says, "Jim, I need one of these." And my dad says, "Well, you don't listen to me now. What makes you think you're going to listen to me when I'm gone?"
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth of it is my dad wrote each of his kids a couple sentence note. And that's an important and valuable possession of mine. Right. It's something that I have that, you know, was just specifically to me. It could have been a lot longer, but, you know, it's special. So I think it's really important to communicate what people mean to you in your life, hopefully while you're alive and have many, many years in the future, but certainly if you're not going to be there.
Yeah, no, I think that's really a great thing that you kind of talk about and suggest everybody do, because, you know, life gets so busy with everybody and family and obligations and work and right. And I think for the most part, we all take advantage of it, like, you know, take it for granted more or less. Right. And then, unfortunately, it often takes, you know, somebody either getting diagnosed with a terminal illness or, God forbid, a sudden death of somebody close to you for you to kind of like, you know, snap to it, so to speak. So I think that's great. Everybody should, you know, you don't have to wait for a tragedy to unfold in order to do this now and be proactive about it. I think that's great. The title Squeeze the Juice, again, I love it. That was a saying that your dad used, right?
Yeah, he would say make things lemonade out of lemons and really get the juice, get the experience, get the most important piece out of an event, out of a podcast, out of a conversation, out of a trip. You know, so it's kind of getting the best of things. Make sure you get something good and take it away. You know,
right, and be present.
That's right.
That's right. That's what I love about it too. It's be present. I try to make a point of that myself in my life too, because otherwise it just, right, the days zoom by, the weeks zoom by, and years go by, and before you know it. So you also mentioned, and I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to ask you about it, and you talk about this in your book too. When you would go to networking events, right, it was not something that you necessarily enjoyed doing, right? Something that you needed to do, you wanted to do, and you did it. And I'm with you. I can do them. I do them, but it's not my first choice of things to do for fun, right? And when you did it, and you would tell the women that you would meet what you do, I'm a financial advisor, right? That's what you used to do first.
And then they would kind of shy away or run away.
Mostly.
Right. Why do you think that was? Like, what is it about a financial advisor that scares people?
You know, those running women, right, when I moved to Florida, really shocked me for a minute, because I needed to find a way to be able to approach them so that they could receive the information, because I think that money is scary to most people. For me, it's not. It's a natural thing. You know, I rolled coins when I was a kid for my dad. I remember when they brought actual money into kindergarten. You know, I had many, many businesses growing up as a kid. Just, it was a comfort level with money and around finance for me. Now, if you put me in a room with 100 people, there's probably 10 of us that have that real comfort level with money. And that's okay. That's my money story. That's my history. But what I find is that most people are uncomfortable about it. So when somebody comes up at a networking event and you say, I'm a financial advisor, they lean back and they say, oh, my husband handles that. They're basically saying, I don't want you to try to sell me something. I don't want you to try and get my money. And I'm like, you know, look, that's, I'm not really trying to get your money. I'm trying to tell you what I do. So I really had to shift that, because nobody wants to look like they're a used car salesman, right? I don't feel like a used car salesman. I'm not a bad person, right? I can probably help you, but if you're running, I can't really help you.
And maybe this is just me, but I speak with many of them, like I was telling you before. And so maybe that's why, but I don't feel that way about financial advisors at all. You know, it's like attorneys get a bad name too. So it's just funny to me, those red flags pop up. And, when they hear the word financial advisor, because they think, right, they think you're trying to sell them something, or, you know, like a life insurance agent or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, everybody needs the things that I do, that an attorney does, that a life insurance salesman does. It's just, it has to be the right moment. And you have to be in the right mindset, and you have to have a need. So what I found was, people going through transition, everything is chaotic. Everything's up in the air. It's emotional, it's exhausting, it's overwhelming, and you just are almost desperate for help, right? And I'm sure that you find this with people that you're coaching through this process. It is, it's a small nightmare going through a divorce, right?
It's trauma.
It's for sure trauma. And it's financial trauma, it's legal trauma, it's dealing with the kids and any sort of parenting plan. I mean, it can be a red hot mess. And on the financial side, it's really a matter of deciding, you know, can you afford to get this divorce? And when you do get the divorce, what does that look like? And if there are assets, how are you splitting them? And, you know, I tell my clients that my job is not to tell you what you have to do. My job is to tell you the consequence of what you're telling me you want to do. So if you tell me, well, I want to keep the house, I want to keep the marital home, and I explain to you that then you will have to give up the cash and you won't have extra income, you'll be house poor. Is that house that important to you that you really aren't going to be able to do the lifestyle things that you've been able to do in the past? Or can we get you a more modest home and you can have both? That's your choice, right? But that's my job, is to help you look at those things.
Yeah, your job and my job as a coach, and even when I practiced as a divorce attorney, you know, similar. We present the client with the options, you know, perhaps the consequences of those options. You do that. You can do that more concretely than attorneys can a lot of the times. But at the end of the day, it's always the client's decision on what they want to do. And we can only counsel them and give them pros and cons, right? But then they do it, they're going to make the final choice. So yeah, I agree with you, is that going through a trauma like a divorce, it's so important to understand the consequences. And if you have goals, that's one of the things I think that I try to instill in people, is to you should have goals, right? You should, what do you want your post-divorce life to look like? And then once you can articulate that and that vision, then every decision that you make during the divorce, whether it's negotiating or choosing, you know, to stay in the house, it's all geared towards that vision, right? And to see if it's possible and to make it a reality if you can. So, as cliche as it is, knowledge is power, right? When it comes to
so true.
To divorce. Now, you also, Jennifer, you talked about, and you write about it in your book, you know, people calling themselves an ostrich, right? And I thought that was very visually compelling. And, you know, explain to me, well, not explain to everybody listening, what you meant by that. And you know, what is it about being an ostrich that's not perhaps so encouraging? In other words, why should people not be an ostrich?
Right. So when I do these talks, there's always, you know, a room full of people, and at least half are what I would consider ostrich, right? I almost have to trick them into a financial conversation because they hear 401k, they hear life insurance, they hear financial planning, cash flow, all these things, and they just put their head in the sand, or they get on their phone and they're distracted because it's just not their aptitude. They're not interested in it, and that's okay. If you were doing a fashion show, I might not be as interested, right, as other people in the room, and I might be on my phone. So everybody has their thing that is of interest to them. But, you know, being an ostrich just means, hey, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to focus on it. So I try to simplify things as best I can, and then we'll get into the details later. But really, financial planning is simple. It's what do you have and what do you want? And you know, and I'm sure in your coaching, that what do you want? What do you want in this future? That takes a little bit of time to tease out as to what they might want in their future. They know what they don't want, right?
Right.
Out of this marriage. But I don't know what my future looks like. I got to think about it. And I haven't had to think about it in 15 years or 20 years or however long. So that's the same thing with respect to your money. Our job as an advisor is to help make your assets as efficient as possible and help achieve what it is your goal is, what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I find, let me know if you agree with this, I find that when people disengage quickly on any topic, right? It could be a fashion show or it could be money. And, you know, like you said, they go right to their phone or they, you know, are disinterested. A lot of that is because they don't understand it, and they're maybe ashamed that they don't understand it or embarrassed, or and maybe they just have no interest, you know, in understanding it either, and they don't care. But, you know, when I start educating people, and I find people start educating themselves and speaking to somebody like yourself regarding their future financial plan and planning for their future, then it's like a light bulb clicks off. And they're like, oh, this isn't so bad, right?
Yeah.
it's not rocket science, but if you don't know what you don't know. And so I'm all about empowerment, empowering the people I work with, you know, to learn the information they need to know. And you're the same way, just with money. And then to see that click, I'm sure you get satisfaction out of that when you explain it and your clients are like, oh.
It is nice. You know, oftentimes that happens in the beginning where there's this little bit of hesitation to address their own financial situation. Like there's hesitation to bring in their stuff and say, I don't really know what I have, right? I got all this stuff, but I don't really know what it is and don't really want to know. And so, you know, initially we'll be having that conversation. I'm trying to gather the data and oftentimes explain to them what somebody else has given them, right? What their other advisor has done. And okay, well, it's operating this way because of XYZ. Maybe you told them you needed income. Maybe you told them you didn't need income, whatever the scenario is. And giving them context around it so that they feel comfortable enough to tell me what it is that they want in that future. And then we can help massage those investments to do just that. I tell my clients, I call these, you know, it's the non-moneyed party. It's the party in the couple that usually says, you handle the finances, honey. I don't want to deal with it. It's that non-moneyed party who really needs a partner when they're going through this process. And look, you can take the bull by the horns. I can educate you. You can run with it from there. Or you can say, Jennifer, I need to meet with you a couple times a year. I need to assess things. I need to make sure I'm on track. And then you worry about the details because I don't want to deal with it. But you got to meet with me a couple times a year, right? We've got to, that's a minimum. That's the minimum requirement, right? First of all, I'm not terrifying. I mean, it's, we can have lunch, you know, we can,
you're very nice.
You know, I'll make this easy, right? Like I'm going to make it as easy as possible. And, you know, we go through these things and make sure that you're on the path that you want to be on.
Yeah. And everybody's path is different. And that's why it's so important to have a customized plan for you in your situation, because like a divorce, and I tell people, you know, don't listen to your friends and family about what happened in their divorces, because that has nothing to do with your divorce, no matter how similar you think your lives are. Same thing with money. Your finances are special and customized to you. And that's why you need a customized financial plan to make sure you succeed in whatever your goals are. And everybody's goals are different too. So absolutely. So let's talk about, because we have a few minutes left, but I really want to hit on this. You're a financial advisor. Okay. There are a lot of financial advisors out there, right? It's not hard to find one. Like, it's not hard to find an attorney. But finding the right one takes a little bit of effort and time. So what are, for people who are interested in finding a financial advisor but don't know how to go about it or what to look for as far as qualifications, or even, you know, when they interview somebody or go on a consultation, what are the questions that people should be asking to know if they have the right person for them?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of basic technical things like, you know, how long have you been in business? Do you have any, you're looking up broker check to see kind of what your history is? Do you have a bunch of complaints? Are there any issues there? Looking at your licensing, you can look at reviews and things that are their website to see who they are and who they look like or who they profess themselves to be. But the reality is, you know, everybody can put on a good face, right? Online. I think it really, and I can only reach as far as my arms go, right? So it's the people that you, it's maybe listening on a podcast and saying, oh, you know, she sounds like a reasonable person. Maybe I'll read her book, or maybe I'll go online and schedule a squeeze the juice call and just see if it might be a fit, right? The kinds of questions, you know, most of it for me, I think, is a gut check. Most of my clients come to me because they were referred, or they interviewed with three people and they said, oh my gosh, you know, you actually listen to me, you actually focus on me, you actually heard what my concern is and what I'm saying, and I feel like you can help me, right? Of late, I've been doing quite a few, working with quite a few people who are going through divorce, and they're really in what I call they need triage, right? So they met with their attorney, they're in the middle of it. Their attorney's asking for a marital balance sheet, or they're asking for all their assets and what do they want? And they have no idea, right? And so they need somebody at that point just on an hourly basis. So I'm doing those things on an hourly basis just to say, look, I'd love to help you at the end with your money and your assets and your whole plan and moving forward. But right now you need, this is like a crunch. We need to just triage this and get you what you need and get you set on a course. And then a month or two later, then we'll meet and we'll do your full financial plan, right? So it just depends what it is that you're looking for and what you need. But I'd say interview at least two, maybe three, and hopefully get them as referrals or from your divorce coach or podcast.
But are there any like key questions that you think somebody should ask in any interview with a financial advisor?
Sure. You should ask about how do they get paid, right? So how does an advisor get paid? Is it fee-based? Is it hourly? Is it commission-based? You want to be very wary of commission-based. You want to see if somebody is, what are their licenses? Are they licensed to do securities as an advisor on an advisory basis, or are they just commission-based? Are they an insurance salesperson, or are they a full financial advisor? I think that you in an ideal world, you want an independent person. You want somebody who is licensed to do both insurance and securities, and you want them to be able to do it on an advisory basis, which is fee-based. So to explain what that means, because that probably is, I got some ostriches in the audience at this point. Probably.
I bet you do.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. So,
fee basis means you're paying for the time your money is managed. So if Jason, if you open an account with me and I manage it from now until the end of the year, and you decide, your cousin just decided they're going to be an advisor and you want to transfer your account, you're not stuck in your account. You only paid me for the time you're with me. So what that does for the client is it has their goals and the advisor goals in the same direction, right? So I have to retain you as a client for 7-10 years to make the same money I would make if I was charging you a commission, right? So we're on the same path. When I get a client, I want that client for 20 years. I'm not trying to sell you something and then never talk to you again. That's not my business model, right? So you can ask questions about, what is your practice model? How do you get clients? But those are the basics.
So I know, just as an example, some advisors will, and I don't know if this is what you mean by fee-based, but this is why I want to ask, because I know a lot of people will probably, if they don't have their head in the sand, I want to get it out. So a lot of financial advisors I've spoken to will say, okay, if you want me to manage your money, their fee is like 1% of whatever your portfolio is that they're managing. That's like a common thing, right? Is that what you mean by fee-based?
That is what I mean by fee-based. The other part of that, when we talk about like financial triage on an hourly basis, that's an hourly fee-based. So somebody who needs just has a specific small need, then we can just charge a price, an hourly fee or a flat fee.
And is the bulk of your Is the bulk of your business managing people's money for them, or other advisors, just advise and then they take care of the actual execution of it themselves if they're comfortable doing that? Do you do both, or?
Sure. I've been doing this for 27 years, and as you accumulate clients, you can't do everything. So I'm best being the advisor for the client, doing the planning, evaluating different investment solutions for them. But I outsource the money management part of it. So there's a portfolio manager who manages, who buys and sells the assets inside of an account based on what our plan is, right? What your strategy is. So let's say you're a retiree who needs income, then you and I develop a portfolio and a strategy to get you that income. And then we leverage a portfolio manager who's going to be watching it all day long, every day, and choosing the stocks and the bonds inside of that portfolio.
Gotcha. But that portfolio manager is, in essence, part of your team, or you and the client.
Effectively, yes. I mean, I look at them as part of my team for sure. But
right. Or does the client pay separately for the portfolio manager?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. Yes. Okay. Excellent. See, these are all the little details that...
Good questions.
I think people ask. That's why I don't want to be shy about it. Jennifer, this was great. I know we kind of just scratched the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, but that's why people are going to read your book. They should read your book. What is the name of your book and where can they find it?
It's called Squeeze the Juice, Live Your Life and Leave a Legacy. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on squeezethejuicebook.com. Or I think there's a link to it on my business page, Modern Wealth.
That's great. And right, your website is modernwealth.com, but Modern Wealth has a little hyphen in it.
It has a hyphen, and oddly enough, there's another advisor in California with Modern Wealth name. So I'm in Florida.
Funny.
You'll see my face on the website.
That's right. Your website is very distinctive in a good way. So you'll know you're in the right place. Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show. And it was great speaking with you. And I know everybody hopefully will be anxious to want to work with you and maybe reach out.
Terrific. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
All right. I hope you learned a little something about squeezing the juice and how it's important to plan effectively and have the right people. Again, I say this all the time, having the right people on your team, objective professionals to help lead you down the road to help you achieve your goals through difficult transitional times such as divorce. Now, if you're looking for help in forming your team of objective professionals, start with me, Jason Lavoie, as your divorce coach. You can reach me at jason@jasonlavoie.com. Check out my website, jasonlavoie.com. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. It's a great free resource for you to learn a lot from all different experts in all areas of divorce, just like Jennifer. And you need to have a plan. You need to have a team and a strategy to help you move forward in the right direction. In the meantime, all I'm going to ask you to do is be strong, act confident, and stay positive. I'm Jason Lavoie, a.k.a. The Divorce Resource Guy, and I'll be seeing you real soon.